The Spider, the Cholera King, 11, Chapter 11. Death's Harvest. The sounds of the conflict outside his cell penetrated only dimly to Wentworth, but he heard them and his eyes lighted, his lips smiled to the news it brought. He had given Jackson positive instructions not to act without his orders, but Jackson, he knew, would consider that his prolonged absence voided previous instructions. He had been waiting for the police, longing for them despite the warning of the plague master that their coming would expose conclusive evidence that he was the spider. Ah, the shooting and the cries had suddenly died, there beyond the wall. How much longer would it be before help came? Wentworth remembered his automatics and drew each one in turn, carefully checked the loading and safety. He was fairly sure that police would open that welded door, but it was well to be prepared. Once more the hissing of an electric flame came, this time eating away the barrier which imprisoned them. Wentworth shook Carnes' shoulder a little, grinned down at him. Then he saw the door sway and got Carr fully to his feet, took two steps to the left of where Carnes lay, drawing his guns. The door crashed inward to the floor and a man in a cop's blue uniform staggered back from the heat, ducked his head and plowed into it. "Come on out, you two," he grinned. "You must be about done by now in this oven." Wentworth laughed and shoved his guns back into their holsters, turned to help Carnes to his feet. A violent blow crashed on the back of his head and his brain exploded in red and white lights. He realized in the ghastly moment before he subsided into senselessness that he had been tricked. That man in police clothes had blackjacked him. Consciousness returned to the spider while he was being half-led, ball carried along a long, dark hallway. Many men were with him, but they walked without conversation and they trod lightly. Within the first few moments, Wentworth discovered that his arms were bound together behind him and that the men with him were not police. It was apparent in the furtiveness of their tones even before he began to make out distinct words. Abruptly, light blazed into his eyes and when he could see again, B stood before a raised dais on which sat the man in scarlet. And, at his feet, with her head resting on his knees, and with his hand touching her bared shoulder, sat Nita Van Sloan. The man in scarlet chuckled. "What, lovers, and you do not speak? Come, come, Spider Wentworth, I thought better of your manners than that." Wentworth smiled gently. "I thought better of your abilities, my dear sir, than to think it would be necessary for you to coerce a lady, even though she is so far above you." The man thumped to his feet, scarlet robe swirling as he strode forward to tower over Wentworth from the edge of the dais. "If I had not promised to spare you life," he threw back his head sharply and laughed. "We marry tonight, the lady and I, and tomorrow you may go free. The lady will be hostage for your proper conduct." He walked back and drew Nita to her feet, stooped to kiss her still lips. Wentworth rocked with the rage that pounded in him and two more men seized his arms and wrists. He locked his lips upon the surging hatred, pulled his eyes away from Nita through long moments while he fought for control. But Wentworth had not yet despaired. There was still a slim hope that Jackson might bring help. Of course, that attack while Wentworth had been prisoner in the sealed cell was a ruse. But maybe Jackson had trailed him still farther. If he had. Wentworth puckered his lips and whistled softly the weird tune which was the signal agreed upon between them. The response was like a bolt of lightning. From somewhere overhead, a submachine gun stammered and men's shrill screams drowned out its staccato chatter. The guards flung away to right and left of Wentworth and revolvers began to speak, seeking out the gunman. The plague master had snatched Nita in the long arm and he held her before him as he backed toward the wall, leveling a long-barreled automatic with his free hand. The man's face remained impassive, but the blazing hatred in his eyes gave Wentworth warning, even before the muzzle swung toward him. He hurled himself below the edge of the dais for protection, heard Hot Lead scream over his head. A murderous fury was upon him. That monster was fleeing, carrying Nita with him. If he escaped, his men would spread to the four corners of the continent sowing the germs of the fearful plague, furthering his dreadful conquest. Wentworth surged to his feet. Men of the plague master lay scattered on the floor, weltering in death. A few had escaped to the hallways and, as Wentworth watched, one of them leveled a revolver at him and fired. A numbing shock hurled Wentworth backward upon the edge of the dais, but he was on his feet again instantly. The lead had found a billet in his body where he did not know, but his rage was a volcano within him. His shoulders swelled. He set his legs and, with a violent wrench, tore his hands free of the ropes which bound them. Skin was ripped from his fingers and wrists. He had felt a bone snap in his left hand, but he was free, free. With a shout that was terrible in its anger, he hurled himself toward the dead, and snatched up guns. That man who had wounded him fired another shot, but whether from fear or excitement, it went wild. The spider fired and his shot sped through Jackson. He shouted, "Get outside! Stop the man in scarlet down the hallway, sir!" Jackson shouted back. "You can get out faster than I can. I'm tied in a rope sling. It's the only way I could use the gun." Wentworth pelted toward the hallway. Strangely, instead of plunging through the doorway, he hit its edge with his shoulder, reeled across the corridor and would have fallen but that his gun hand, rigidly outthrust, caught his weight. He leaned there a moment, breathing deep and noisily, looking down at his side. There was a spreading stain there, below the short ribs. Wentworth took off his belt, and drew it tightly over the wound. Agonizing pains shot through his body, but when it was done, he could stagger onto the pursuit. He was only halfway down the hall when Jackson overtook him, threw a strong arm about his body. "You're wounded, Major," he cried. "Stop and let me." "Stop hell," Wentworth rasped. "The Plague Master is getting away. Jackson, he's got Nita." "Nita?" Out of the darkness ahead, Nita's voice lifted in answer for a moment. Then it was choked off. A motor roared, dwindled again into the distance. Wentworth gasped Nita's name at every breath, and his breath was strained and scant, broken by coughing that seemed to tear flesh. Jackson steered him to an automobile, got him into it and started the car rolling. Wentworth coughed again. "Touch the lung," he choked. "Bullet touched lung." The car bellowed on a shortened driveway, skidded into a road and began to gather momentum.
"Don't know this section too well, sir," Jackson said.
"We might lose them." Wentworth laughed, broke with a cough.
"Don't try to follow. Go to Manhattan. Riverside Towers."
Jackson peered at him anxiously. Riverside Towers was Miss Nita's residence. Could the Major's mind be wandering because of the wound? Jackson's lips tightened. The Major needed medical attention and needed it at once. To hell with this chase. Jackson had no thoughts of service to humanity. His service and devotion was for one man. Wentworth braced himself solidly in the corner of the cushions, looked about him with swimming vision. But the rush of air was fighting the giddiness from his wound.
"Jackson," he shouted eerily.
"Damn your eyes, I said Manhattan, and Riverside Towers. You're heading north, instead of west." Jackson's jaw was stubborn, but he flashed a look at Wentworth's set face, at the fine, strong line of his chin and the direct eyes. By God, the Major meant what he said. He couldn't be so badly wounded. Jackson grinned.
"Right you are, Major."
He spun the car to the left at the next crossroad, trod the accelerator to the floor. Wentworth began to talk.
"Crack that damned code wide open," he said, speaking slowly, as if he were being careful of every word.
"And so I know where to look for the master of the plague, Jackson. He always was crazy about Miss Nita. He had even taken an apartment in the same building, rather secretly, some time ago. Made an effort at disguise when I saw him. Fool. As if he could trick a man who created disguise."
Jackson, eyes fixed on the road which was sliding under the wheels at better than 17 miles an hour, said merrily,
"Yes, sir. We're going after a dead man, Jackson, a man everybody thinks is dead. But he's very much alive right now."
Wentworth's breath gusted out through his teeth. He fought down the cough.
"Alive right now, but he won't be long.
You see, Jackson, every one of those code messages was the name of a victim, or a clue to him, and they were in trick codes, with double substitutions and plenty of variants and nulls. But the guilty man? Really a very simple code, and only one substitution, so if every other diagram went uninterrupted this one at least would be understood. Yes, he wanted to be sure that everyone thought him dead." His head bowed, his thoughts misty. Richard Wentworth explained his solving of the codes in this way. Taking all of the messages, he found that 11 variations of the simple circle and cross marks were used. He figured further that if each of these symbols had a different meaning in each of the 9 rectangles, it would give 99 letters, which was far too many for the English, 26-letter alphabet. Yet the 11 variations were not enough in themselves, so he figured finally that by dividing the 9 rectangles into 3 rows of 3 each and giving a variation a different meaning, not in each square, but in each row, he would have only 33 characters, which was much closer to the correct total of 26. Studying the diagrams, he found a great number of simple circles and cross marks, occurring in such sequences that it made it impossible for him to believe that they had a meaning. Thus three simple circles in a straight sequence would mean, say, three E's, or three T's. The English language does not have such sequences. Logic showed him that it would be impossible to make sequences of letter symbols alone in the diagrams, and still make them seem games of tit-tat-toe, so he assumed the presence of nulls and decided, as a first try, to call nulls whatever symbols appeared most frequently. As an examination will show, this was clearly the simple circle and plain cross. So much for the analysis of the diagrams, in its successful form. I say nothing of the attempts to find meaning in set sequences of characters, in the varying lengths and shapes of the rectangles and of the lines which divided them. All those were eliminated finally by trial and error method through a sheer inability to make sense of them. For the actual deciphering of the code, Wentworth, as we know, was convinced that the diagrams have the name of the next victim. Working from this basis, he finally found one diagram which gave a name, that of RIDS, as he explained to Jackson. If you will turn back to the diagram found on the wall in Carne's apartment, and compare it with the key given at the end of this footnote, you will be able to read the message RIDS. Others of the warnings were not so simple, but because the first three letters invariably made sense when the RIDS key was applied, Wentworth finally decided that those three letters were in themselves a key. For instance, in the first diagrams, found on the chest of Christian Daly, the first three letters form the word SA. The subsequent letters were a jumble, thus J.C.L.U.C. Wentworth adduced that the word sought at the beginning of the code message meant that in the next letter following, the letter J would be taken from a substitution alphabet in which A equals S, B equals T, C equals U and so on. That the second letter following the word sought, in this case C, would be taken from a substitution alphabet in which A equals O, B equals P, C equals Q and so on. That the third letter would be taken from a substitution alphabet in which A equals T. After that, he repeated the sequence of rotating substitution alphabets, and interpreting the code message JCLUC, he obtained ROSEO, the name of the steel company whose president was the next to be murdered by the tic-tac-toe artist. In a similar way, using the first three letters as the key for rotating substitution alphabets, he read the other messages. Herein is the key for the tit-tat-toe cipher. Another thing, Jackson. When the man in scarlet knocked me out with narcotic gas, he changed the diagrams on the wall of the room. I believe that he decided he must pretend to be killed himself after he forced me, with drugs, to tell where Kirkpatrick's and my suspicions pointed. That was the real tip-off. The speedometer needle hovered at 78. Not all of Jackson's efforts had been able to get it higher. They were blazing up Riverside Drive at last, reaching for the towers in the middle 80s. The tire skidded the last 30 feet and Wentworth reeled to the street almost before it stopped. He drew the revolver from his belt, braced himself wide-legged with a hand pressed to his side. Then he put his head down and walked through the open doors. In the elevator, he said huskily. 8th Jackson pushed the dumbfounded operator from the elevator and sent it upward himself. He had an automatic in his fist and when the cage stopped, he whipped open the door and went out first. There was a heavy double crash of guns and Jackson pitched face down on the floor of the hall. His uniform cap dribbled along the wall and lay still. There was a hole through its crown. Wentworth went out of the elevator on braced legs, his eyes burning hotly in his head. He knew which door to look at, and he saw the gun leveled through the peephole. His revolver bucked in his hand and there was a shrill cry. The spider's lips twitched. He pushed with painful perseverance toward the door at which he had shot. He pressed the muzzle of the gun to the lock, pulled the trigger twice, and his shoulder opened the door. He had one bullet left. He stood still while the door clapped shut behind him. Then he moved steadily along a narrow hall at the end of which he could see a lighted room. He moved a little farther until he could see half of the Davenport, could see Nita stretched on it with her head lolling back, her hands hanging. About her throat were wrapped the long, limber fingers of the master of the plague. Wentworth took another step and fired. The impact of the lead knocked the killer's grip from Nita's throat and her body slumped down to the floor. Wentworth stood just inside the room, looking at Nita, then looking into the burning eyes of the master of the plague. He moved forward, relentlessly. Now, butcher, it's time you die. The master did not lack courage. He lifted his right hand so that the scarlet silken sleeve slid back from his wrist, ducked his oversized head and charged with a shrill, harsh scream. Wentworth's hands moved with a swift, sure strength and gripped the P-Log Master's throat. The man fought terribly. His right fist pounded cruelly at Wentworth's wounded side. He gouged at Wentworth's eyes and kicked at his body. Blackness roared before the spider's gaze, swarmed over his brain. But throughout his being there was only one thought, one transcendent purpose to kill this man. A snarl pushed out of his lips. He wrenched at that neck he gripped as if he would tear head from body, and he realized that he was being forced backward to the wide, open studio window. The master of the plague saw his own death approaching, but he would take the spider with him. It was a battle of waning strengths, the spider against the butcher. Even seconds might doom him now, seconds that might see the end of consciousness. Despair was in his pain-driven soul. Jackson was dead, out there in the hall. Nita strangled. Wentworth's staring eyes widened as he gazed past the huge, bald head of the plague master. For there was Jackson, staggering along the hall, a bloody tear on his scalp marking the course of the bullet. Even as the brave man advanced, Nita stirred faintly on the floor. A cry like a great cheer rose in Wentworth's throat. He stared into the bulging eyes of the plague master and laughed. With its strange strength of madness and despair, of an exhausted man who suddenly sees hope and help, Wentworth lifted the master of the plague bodily from the floor, spun about and flung him through the studio window, down through the dark emptiness of the night to the pavement 8 stories below. Wentworth staggered then, but he managed to reach Nita's side before he fell upon his knees. Managed to see her slow smile as she lifted weary arms to him. He tried to laugh lightly and didn't know if he had succeeded. "To think that excuse for a man could hope to win you," Nita whispered. "Hush, Dick. Don't even think it." "But I never guessed, Dick, until he brought me to this apartment, that the master of the plague had killed another man disguised as himself, that the man in scarlet was Sam Rawids." The end. This has been a presentation of The Spider and the Cholera King, written by Norval Page, a.k.a. Grant Stockbridge. Audio transcribed by The Pulp Reader, text-to-speech experiment.